I want to tell you today about the thing that I made that I was the most proud of. I need to set the scene for this a little bit. As Matt mentioned yesterday, we went to the same college. He went many, many years before I did. But this college, while it was like it's amazing, like it was really good fun, towards the summer, when all your work's handed in, because we all lived on site, it got a little bit boring. Like, we didn't really have anything to do during the day. And, like, this is when lots of pranks would happen and that sort of thing. But after this had happened to us in the first year, we'd had these, like, 4 weeks with not really anything to do. So we realised for our second year, we wanted to do something with those weeks that would be more fun. So for the entirety of our second year, me and my friend Jack, we saved up all the empty water bottles we could. Okay, I'm sure none of you have any idea where we're going with this. But we saved them all up. We just kept them in Jack's room under his bed. And by about May time in that second year, we'd accrued about 120 water bottles. So what we did was one night we took them all into the common room and we started taping them together and we made a raft. So we built, we put the really big ones, you know, like the really round ones you get. We put three of them on the bottom so it was balanced. We got a bed sheet, we put it over and we taped it on. And I think we've got some pictures. You see the first picture, that's Jack posing with our raft. You see, it looks pretty amazing, doesn't it? Can you put the second one up as well? Look at that, that's how strong it was. You could stand on it on top of water. That's the pool that we had at college. Don't look at the sort of chubby guy on the right there who's modelling it for us. We spent all year planning this, how we were going to do it. Jack, like every night he was online searching like the best way to how you make something balanced, looking into the science of it all, and it floated really well. We were so proud of it. And I'm sure most of you are thinking, why are you proud of that? Like, do you know what I mean? You look at it and you think, it's not exactly like a cruise line or anything. But we were just so proud of it because we'd spent all year working on it and making it perfect. But unfortunately, like a lot of things that people spend time on, we didn't really plan it that much. So we left all the sort of pieces of paper on the water bottles and the Coke bottles and everything. So over time, when it was left in the water, they started to sort of peel off because they soaked up all the water like a sponge. And over time, that stuff all filled up the bottom. So the staff at college weren't very happy because it kept mucking up the pool, which is understandable. So we played with it for about a week when the weather was hot. It was really good fun. But then I think we left it was probably the Friday night. We left it overnight, and then when we got up on Saturday, went into the pool to look for it, it wasn't there, and we thought, can I get an R for that? Thank you. Even if you don't feel the pain, I really did feel the pain. And it turned out that the staff had seen it, and it was all sort of falling to bits because the tape was coming under and the bottles were everywhere, so they just thrown it in the bin. And obviously to them, it was just like a hunk of rubbish, fair enough, but to us, that was something we spent a whole year making, and we were really proud of it. We had loads of plans to take it out on a river to see how far along we could get with it. That probably would have been a terrible idea, but it would have been an even better story. So, this was the raft that we made. If you just go into the next slide, so it's blank. So even though to the staff, this thing we'd made was just a pile of rubbish, to us, it was really important because we'd made it. And I think naturally we feel closer and more partial to things that we've made and we've created than maybe stuff we've just bought from a shop or something else. I think there's something about us that we love creating things and we feel closer to the things we've created. No one else in the world, if you've asked them to build a raft, would have built it exactly like we did. That was a totally unique way of doing a raft. I mean, to be honest, they probably would have built it a bit better so it didn't fall to bits. But we built it totally unique. And I think that's a good small picture of what God's like with us. We can sometimes wonder why he might love us, but he loves us because he made us. No one else could have made us just like he did. We're made exactly to his designs, and that's why he loves us. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, about just how much God loves you just because of the fact that he made you. Just to sort of recap a bit about what we spoke about yesterday, I spoke about God making all the animals, but he made us different. He made something special in us. He put his image into us that makes us totally distinct from all the animals. That's where our value as humans come from, and obviously we spoke about all that yesterday. So today what we're going to do is we're going to go on ahead a little bit in the story of Genesis. But first I want to give you some background to the book of Genesis. Now, you may not know this, but the books in the Bible weren't written in English. They were written in ancient languages quite a long time ago. So the book of Genesis was written thousands of years ago. And it's a book all about beginnings, like I said yesterday. But when the book was written, the world was full of people who believed in different gods. You've probably heard about this stuff in history, that there was a god of war, gods of thunder, gods of harvest, gods of all sorts of things that people believed in. So if the crops didn't grow, that probably meant someone hadn't been praying to the god of the harvest. That's the way they would think. Or like if you had a fight, like a military fight, and you didn't win, maybe you didn't pray hard enough to the god of war. That's how people thought. But these gods, they weren't quite like the god we worship, because they were sort of capable of being douchebags as well. Like, they weren't all good. They had very human emotions and that sort of thing. And they certainly weren't really interested in people except for what they could get from people. So if people made sacrifices, that made the gods like them a bit more. Or if the gods worshipped in the right way, that made them like them a bit more. So that's sort of the context. That's what the world's like when Genesis is written. And the picture Genesis paints of what God is like is totally different to that. It's not a God who only cares about humans for what he can get from them. And it's not a God who's sort of far away and maybe lives on a mountaintop. It's a God who's really interested in humans because he made them. And I think that's such a beautiful picture of what God's like, that he's totally different to those other gods that people believed in. So we're going to read a bit now from Genesis 3. And just to catch you up on the story and what's happened, yesterday we talked about God making everything, God making all the animals, God then making humans. And it doesn't take long after God has made humans. You've probably heard this before, that they mess up and they do something they shouldn't have done. They eat from the tree in the middle of the garden, the one that God told them not to. So we're going to pick up the story in Genesis 3, verse 8. And this is after that's happened. This is when the man and the woman, Adam and Eve, are hiding from God. So it says this: "Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and they hid from the Lord God among the trees of the garden." So yeah, this is just after the man and the woman have first screwed up, and they decide to hide from God because they're scared of what they've done. They feel real guilt. And there's quite a lot of stuff going on in that verse. But the bit I really want to pick out today is that middle bit where it talks about the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And I don't know about you, but that sounds amazing. The fact that God was walking in the garden with this man and a woman. It doesn't sort of sound like this was a one-off either. It sort of sounds like this was something he did quite a lot. He walked in the garden with his people. That's another picture of just how different the God we worship is. It's different to all those other gods that people believed in. This is a God who wants to walk with us, wants to walk with the people he's made. And he's not distant, and he's really interested in us. Now, we're probably not like people back in those days where we feel like maybe we need to make idols, we need to make sacrifices to things. We probably know that we don't have to sort of climb a mountain or anything like that to get near to God. But often as well, we maybe feel like if we're not in a church service, if we're not at the point, if we're not at Letton Hall, maybe there's some sort of distance between us and God. Maybe even though we don't believe we have to go somewhere to meet with God, we struggle to sort of connect with him. We maybe struggle to feel close to him when we're not maybe a thing where we think is a God thing. Do you see what I mean? That maybe when we're just living our normal lives, going to school and whatever, we don't think we can have that same access to God that we can have maybe when we're at church or at Letton or something like that. And I guess that probably comes down to the fact that maybe deep down, we maybe don't believe God's always that close to us. And I think that's a massive mistake, because I think he really is. And it's such an important thing for our lives, especially as like young Christians, to know that God is near you wherever you are and whenever it is you want to speak to him. And obviously, God doesn't physically walk with us anymore. That was sort of a thing that happened back then. But he's just as open to us now as he was then. And I think like I spoke about yesterday, this can be one of those things that maybe you've heard before, that sort of like people used to say this thing. I don't think they say it anymore, but God's just a prayer away, that like God's... we've got that instant access to God. And that's one of those things that maybe it's in your head, but it's not made its way down to your heart. And I think that's what I want to talk about today. For me, I've been a Christian, as I said yesterday, I've been a Christian for about 18 years. And this was one of those things that was a real revelation to me fairly recently, like only a few years ago, this first struck home at a really deep level. So it was my third year of college. The raft was in the second year. The third year this was, and I was really worried at this point, because I owed £2,000 to the college that I couldn't pay, My student loan didn't quite cover my fees. It was like a big gap that I had to sort of raise myself, and I'd managed to do it for the first 2 years. But this third year, I couldn't do it. I was £2,000 short, which is a heck of a lot of money. And I was just really worried, because if I couldn't pay that, then I couldn't graduate with all my friends. I'd have to sort of leave, get a job, earn that money, and then pay it, and then have to graduate later. And it would have been such a shame. I would have missed out on so much just because of this money. And I'd known this for a while, that I had to find this money, but it was really starting to hit home this one evening. And like, I was just in my room, and I just felt so low. I was just like, I just don't know how this is going to happen. Like, I just couldn't see a way out of it. I couldn't see how this was going to happen. And I often get a bit, often feel a bit weird praying about money to God. It somehow feels a bit wrong. Like, it feels like, I don't know why, but maybe this is wrong for me to pray about this. So I sort of, maybe I shouldn't pray. Maybe what should I do? And all I just did, all I prayed was just the words, God help me. I didn't do anything sort of crazy. I didn't do like a big, I'm going to proclaim that this money's going to arrive in the next day. I didn't do like a big crazy faith prayer or anything like that. I just sort of said, God, like, I really need your help. I just can't see how this is going to sort itself out. And I can't explain what happened, but it literally felt like God was in the room with me. I didn't necessarily hear a voice straight away. I didn't hear, like, there was no sort of sound of, like, angels singing or anything like that. I just really felt like I was in this room by myself, but that he was there with me. And it was such a powerful experience. Like, it would be easy to look at from the outside and think, yeah, oh, it was just sort of emotions and that. But I know, like, I'm utterly convinced that that was what I needed right then, to feel like God was there. And I just got the real sense that God was saying, you know what, it's going to be okay. Like, I've got you this far. I've put you in the place you're at. I'm going to get you through it. And actually, I did get through it. Just some money came from somewhere I wasn't expecting. And, you know, it didn't happen straight away. It wasn't like one of those crazy miracle things where someone pushes the check under the door when you finish praying. That would have been amazing. That didn't happen. But it was, it was just slowly the money came in, and I was able to pay it off and graduate. And that was brilliant. And, yeah, that really shocked me, that I'd lived my whole life, and I knew that God was always with me, but I'd never really felt him, like, almost physically with me. It was such a strong feeling. It was like he was literally sat in the room with me. And there's a bit like this in the Bible, a bit later in the book of Genesis. There's a guy called Jacob who, you know, Joseph in his Technicolor Dreamcoat, his dad is a guy called Jacob. And there's a bit where he's alone in the desert one night, and he wrestles with God, which sounds amazing. I mean, it sounds like you'd get your bum handed to you, because obviously God's a badass, but they're wrestling all night. And then in the morning, God wakes up and he says, Jacob wakes up and he says, surely God was in this place and I didn't perceive it, or I didn't know it. And it's like this thing that he's literally been spent all night with God, but he didn't click. And I think that's so true for us as well, that we can have these experiences and it's like God's wrestling with us, and he's shouting at us, and he's like, come on, this is, I can help you, just sort of reach out, I'm right here. But we're just not aware of it. And I think partly that's because of how, like, loud our lives are, that we spend our time, we have phones, we always have music on, we struggle to sit in silence. I remember when, like, the half-hour hold is such a good example of this. I don't know how many of you struggle. I would really struggle when I was a letterer, just to sit there in silence for half an hour. And that's just like half an hour out of a whole day to sit there in silence. I really struggle with it. And I think that's partly because of just how loud our lives are. And that makes it a lot harder for us to hear God. And I think, yeah, when we realize just how accessible God is, that we don't have to do anything special, we don't have to be anywhere special, that changes how we live our lives. It changes how we make day-to-day decisions. Every little decision you face, you can just think, well, God's right here with me. What does he want me to do? When I was young, this is quite, this is a very embarrassing story. I was about 14 when this happened, but it's really embarrassing if I was 14, so we'll say I was 8. Just bear in mind, I was 8 when this happened. So when I was 8, I've got an older brother who's 3 years older than me, and I don't know if you ever had this, but he used to get to stay up later than me by about an hour, so I had to go to bed about 8 o'clock at this point. And which is fine in the winter when it's dark outside, but in the summer, and you can look outside your window and your friends are playing football on the field outside your house, and you're in bed, that's ridiculous. But I would be in bed, and I would just always be thinking, oh, but my brother's downstairs, he's not going to go to bed for another hour or whatever, and he's having all this fun. And at this point as well, this is a little bit sad as well, my whole family is really into sort of like murder mystery TV programs. So we love like CSI, Midsummer Murders, Dalziel & Pascoe, all that stuff, like we loved it. But most of that stuff would start like an hour before I went to bed and then finish an hour after I went to bed. So I would watch the first hour and see like the guy die, but then I never found out who did it. So if I was a policeman, I'd be brilliant at identifying what a dead body is, but I'd have no idea who the criminal was because I never saw the end of one of these episodes. So there was this thing where, so like I'd have to go to bed halfway through the episode, and every time I'd be like, oh, but why can't I just stay up and see what happens? And my mum would always be like, well, why did you start watching it? You knew you were going to go to bed. And it was just sort of this cycle thing that would happen. But there was this one time, and it was Midsummer Murders, which is like, if you watch it, it's amazing. Basically, Midsummer's this little village, and people always die. And I reckon there's probably been about like 3,000 people have died in Midsummer over the course of all these episodes. There's probably no one left. But there was this one episode of Midsummer Murders, and it was like the best one I'd seen. Like it was like tense. I sort of had some idea who I thought the murderer was, but then like something happened, and I thought, oh no, it's not them. And then like you think of someone else, and then that person dies, and like my mind was really in it. So I pleaded with my mum. I said, Mum, please let me stay up. I'll get up extra early. I'll do whatever. Just let me stay up. And I think she was probably just bored of me nagging her. So she said, okay, you can stay up this time, but in the break, go upstairs, put your PJs on, get downstairs, get ready to go to bed straight away. So I did. I stayed up, and I watched the end, which was a massive mistake. Because I don't know if you know this, but all the grisly murders happen in the second hour, and all the stuff that's going to mess you up as an eight-year-old, that happens then. So when it was time to go to bed at about 9, I remember we lived in, like, it was a really thin house, but it was 3 floors, so you had to go up one flight of stairs, then another to get to the middle floor, then another flight of stairs, then another to get to the top. It sounds like it's a massive house, I promise you it wasn't. And our lounge was on the middle floor. So I came up from that, and I went up the first flight of stairs, and I looked upstairs, all the lights were off. And I was thinking, could be a murderer up there. Like, how would I know? I've got no way of knowing who's up there. So I sort of, it must have taken me 10 minutes to move off that landing and into my bedroom, but I was only 8, so don't worry. And I went up that flight of stairs, and I did get into bed, and I remember lying there and being, like, I can't ever remember being more scared than that. And, like, I don't know why, it's just something about that episode, about seeing, like, I can't even remember what happened with these people. I've probably suppressed the memory of how these people died, but it was pretty full on in this episode. And yeah, I was just lying in my bed so scared, looking around, and you know, like, you see shadows and you think, was that shadow there yesterday? And then you hear like a creak that you haven't heard, and it's like, it's so scary. But I remember lying there, and I don't know why this came into my head at that point, but there'd just been sort of a new version of a really old Christian song. You might have sung it at primary school, this song. He's got the whole world in his hands. So like Tim Hughes had released like a really slow, he's got the whole world in his hands, like that. And it was quite cool, and that was like big in church at the moment. So for some reason, this hasn't happened since, it never happened before. That song just came into my head, and I thought, I just need to sing this song, I just need to sing this song. So in my head, I was just going, he's got the whole world in his hands. Just like, just sort of trying to convince myself, don't be scared, God's got it all in his hands, it's all going to be okay. And I don't know why, but it really worked. Like, for some reason, I just felt so safe. I felt like, if that's true, if God does have the whole world in his hands, then I shouldn't be scared. And then that's when, like, logic kicked in, and I thought, why would someone murder me? I'm just an 8-year-old boy. I'm just safe here in my bed. So everything just sort of clicked from then on, and I think that was one of those times that I look back on. I think that was a really important day for me as a Christian, that was a moment when I felt God just, I don't know, God met me in my, like, ridiculous emotional state that anyone else would think, what are you doing? You're just being such an idiot, as if you're scared. God met me in that, and he wasn't scared to get involved in my situation. He met me where I was. Now, obviously, that's a very specific, silly example from my life, but I'm sure it's true that there have been times in your life when you've felt like you can't go any further. You're sort of at the end of your rope. Like, you feel like, oh, if I have another day like that, I don't know how I'm going to be able to cope. Maybe it's a situation with people at school, maybe it's at home or whatever it is. It's just something that you feel like, oh, I can't go through that again. And if you ever reach that point, there's lots of promises in the Bible about just how close to you God is. Can we get the Bible verses up? I just picked out 3 verses that that jumped out to me. The first one is Psalm 34:18. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted. Acts 17:27, he, which is talking about God, is not far from each one of us. And Psalm 119 verse 151, which someone is talking to God and they say, you are near to me, O Lord. And you can find verses like this littered all over the Bible about people in their specific situations that maybe they thought were a bit silly, but they feel like God is really close to them at that time. And I think that's such a thing we can be so quick to forget. I want to give you a little demonstration now. So I need a volunteer. Thanks, Joe Price. Joe Price? Joe Price. Is he even in here? Yes, he is. There he is. Oh, it would have been bad if he's not. I don't know if any of you are fans of body language, but I love body language. Like, I read a book about it. I don't think it was like a very... I don't know how true it was, but like the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, that could be true. So just the idea that you can sort of pick up signals about people from how they are. So just as an example, if someone's nervous, often they you see them like holding their own hand. Like that, like if you ever you see someone in court waiting for the verdict, they sort of stand like, and that's almost like they're trying to sort of replace where when they were younger, their mum would hold their hand to make them feel safe, so they sort of do that. And then sometimes if they're really nervous, they almost give themselves a hug by doing like this. And you can tell a lot from it. It's really interesting. But one thing about it is this thing of personal space. Now, we talk about personal space a lot, like don't invade my personal space. So be ready, I'm going to invade your personal space in a second. So distance is really important in body language. So if I'm waiting for the bus with Joe and I don't know Joe, we're probably not going to stand like this. Or like this. We're probably going to stand, maybe Joe does, I don't know, we'd probably stand like this. Like, we're not really looking at each other, we're fairly far apart, because there's no sort of connection between us. But if we know each other a bit and we're talking, so turn and face me a bit, we'd probably talk like this. But maybe the first time you meet someone, you're a bit far away and you lean in a bit to shake their hand. But then you get to know them a bit better and you go like this. And then when you really get to know them close, you talk like this. And then maybe there's a bit of that as well. And I think this is quite an interesting image that when you don't know somebody very well, maybe you're out here, and then it goes here, and then it goes here, and then it goes here. That's what I wanted to illustrate. Before it gets weird, can you sit down? Thanks. and I don't know if you've ever experienced someone who has no idea about personal space. There was this guy at college, I wasn't going to share this, but this is very funny, called Anton. And it would be a case of, hi, Anton, you okay? Because he used to just get right up here. And if ever you, like, took a step back, he would be right there with you. Like, you wouldn't be able to get away. And he was one of those guys as well who didn't realise that little bits of spit would come out of his mouth. And it's so close. You can feel everyone, and you don't have time to be ready for it. So you're sort of blinking every time spit lands on it. It's horrible. So just be aware of personal space. But yeah, I think that's a bit of a silly example, but I think that's exactly how God is with us, that he doesn't invade our personal space. He doesn't get closer to us than we're comfortable with. He's not going to sort of, if you don't want him to get close to you, he's not going to sort of get involved. He's going to come as close as you want to. There's a verse in the Bible that says, draw near to me. So this is God talking. He says, draw near to me and I will draw near to you. And it's like God saying, hey, if you come and you show that you want to be close to me, I'll do the rest and I'll meet you where you're at. But hey, if you don't want this, that's cool. I'm not going to force myself on you.
Okay, so I've got a verse that I feel like God's given me to share. It's Matthew 11, 28-30. And it says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I just feel like perhaps for some of you, the stuff going on in your lives, hard things, tough times, and you feel like you've tried everything to sort it out. And you've just used up all your energy, like you've got nothing left, really. And I feel like that verse is for you, and God's calling you to hand it over to him. And actually, that it's no longer your battle to fight, but you've got to allow God to take the battle over for you. And he says to take his yoke, because his yoke is light, and that just means to give that weight you're carrying to him, and allow him to take that on, and... yeah, just to stop trying to do it in your own strength, but doing God's.
Cool. So I had this word just as I came in this evening, and anyone who kind of knows me a little bit knows I like to use metaphors a lot. So if you can, please try and follow the metaphor. But basically, this evening I was on washing up duty with Grace and some of the boys, and obviously I'm wearing a white T-shirt, and we had lasagna and cherry cheesecake, which isn't the best. And all the time that I was just kind of there, washing up, rushing around, trying to clean up, I was like, I'm going to get something on my T-shirt. I'll just have to change after. But I was trying to avoid it, trying desperately not to get anything on my T-shirt, because I quite like this T-shirt. But it wasn't until I kind of like chilled and came in here, and I sat down and I looked at my jeans, and you can't really see, but I've got food stains all down my jeans. And I really feel that this is how some people might be living at the moment, and they're feeling like their life is this white T-shirt, and they're like, I can't get anything on my white T-shirt. How can I get anything on my white T-shirt? I've got to show people that my white T-shirt is clean. But, like, that's their outward appearance of their Christian journey. But when they take the time to look down, they notice that their relationship with God, which is their jeans, is just covered with dirt and spots, and they just haven't really taken it into account. And therefore, I feel that God is just asking you to check your relationship with him. He knows you're struggling, and he wants you to just basically drop the act. He wants you to come before him now and just give it all over to him. Like, it's so exhausting just trying to keep your white T-shirt clean. I don't know why I just didn't accept that it was going to get dirty. I'm glad it didn't. But, yeah, Johnny's been talking about living to human standards. And when we're constantly trying to look good for other people, it's just so tiring. And God doesn't want this. God didn't want this for our lives. He wanted us to live in relationship with him. And it should just come naturally that our T-shirts come across as white. Yeah, we might get the occasional stain on, but God's got a flipping good washing machine. So, but yeah, I also feel that people don't know how to give their washing to God, basically. And that's just from you learning how to be a pretender, learning how to keep your white T-shirt clean, keeping people's eyes up here on your white T-shirt, but not letting them look at your jeans. And I want you to be able to show God your jeans tonight. I know it's a weird metaphor, but please stick with it. But I really want you to just be like, God, look at my jeans. Take my jeans if you need to. And clean them, because that's what I want. I want that relationship with you. And we can try and do life on our own, but there's no way we can do that.